Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to another episode of the podcast, Lead Singer Syndrome, with me, your host, as always, Shane Tolt. How you doing? How you feeling? Are you enjoying your summer? Oh, you bet your ass I am. Your sweet ass, I am enjoying an incredible summer. I got back from Europe a little while ago. Whew, it was hot over there. Very hot. And now I'm just enjoying a beautiful, not that hot, Canadian summer. It's really, really great. And I hope you are doing the same wherever you are in the world, listening to me talk to other lead singers. And today, we got a good one. We got a different one. Mr. Perry Grip of Nerf Herder is here. They are nerdy. They're a nerdcore band, Oxnard. Started this scene. A lot of people called it Nardcore. They're from Santa Barbara, California, not too far away. And they're a really interesting band because they started out kind of in the mainstream on a major label doing Weezer-inspired nerd rock. And they had some big mainstream opportunities, such as writing the theme song for the Buffy the Vampire Slayer soundtrack and also having a pretty big song on MTV. And then they went the indie route and they became aligned with the Fat Records, Epitaph, skate punk scene of the 90s. We get into all that and more. It's a really interesting talk with a really interesting guy. You're going to love this one. Before we get into it with Perry, I want to remind you, you can always get in touch with me. My emails are open. I don't know how you could close an email. If someone knows how, let me know. But my emails are open. LeadSingerSyndrome@gmail.com. I read them all. I respond to as many as I can. But I do appreciate your comments, questions, concerns, suggestions. All awesome. And of course, if you want to support this thing, keep it coming at you week after week. I do rely on listener support. Check out LeadSingerSyndrome.com/All Access. That will get you into the All Access Club. For just a few dollars a month, you get bonus episodes, bonus content, access to merchandise, and of course, an incredible community of my sinners. What's up, my sinners? Worldwide, 500 strong. It's a beautiful thing. Thank you for all the love, all the support. Sinnerfest 3 coming up soon. Can't wait to see all you guys. It's going to be such a good time. Once again, the link, leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. And while I have your attention, don't forget my band Silverstein. We're going back on tour with the Amity Affliction, Holding Absence, and Unity Texas. This starts in beautiful Phoenix, Arizona on August 25th, goes all across the United States of America and into Canada. We wrap up the tour in Montreal and Toronto. It's going to be so much fun. Such a huge tour, honestly, and it's selling really well. So make sure that you pick up your tickets. Head over to vip.silversteinmusic.com. We've got VIP, regular tickets. I was going to say and everything in between, but that doesn't make any sense. We've got VIP and regular tickets. So check it out. Can't wait to see you. It's very, very exciting. And if you're European, we're coming back this fall as well with Comeback Kid and Senses Fail. So that's going to be amazing as well. Regardless, let's get into this week's episode with Perry Grip of Nerf Herder.
Okay, are we talking?
We did it.
All right,
and you sound great. You looked great
all
for
right.
a moment.
Oh, thanks. I'll take any compliment I can get.
Well, Perry, thank you so much for doing this, man. It's so good to have you on the show. I'm here with Perry of Nerf Herder, and other things too. We're going to get into, but this is really awesome, man. I've been a big fan of you guys for a very long time. So thanks for doing this.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I think I still have my Nerf Herder merch kicking around from high school. I never get rid of anything. I think it was a blue shirt with orange writing across it that said Nerf Herder.
That sounds right. That's a pretty obscure shirt, but yeah, I think it.
Is it worth money? Can I make money on it?
No Nerf Herder stuff is worth money. So you can't.
Well, you know, I know where I got it. I remember. I'm 41 now. I was in high school and I went to see you guys. I wasn't particularly interested in the headlining band, which was Bloodhound Gang.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh.
And I saw you guys play in Toronto at the Cool House or the Warehouse, whatever it was called at the time.
Yeah. I hope it was a fun show. I'm sure I was probably pretty drunk.
I think everybody was drunk. Bloodhound Gang was, I mean, it's weird. It seemed like a weird tour because, you know, obviously they're known for being like a funny band and so are you, but it's like different kinds of funny. Like they seemed very destructive with their
yeah.
humor and not like fun nerdcore. Like I remember the bass player was like full on making out with a chick while he was playing on stage. And then there was a dude that was trying to drink like a case of Dr. Pepper. And he was like, they were trying to get him to not throw up. And then of course he threw up and it was like really messy.
Yeah. They had a lot of shtick, but we loved those guys. We did two tours with them.
Oh.
So we actually toured with them a lot and they were very, very nice guys. Their shtick was like, sort of like crazy and a little bit scary, but they were super cool and very nice guys we're still friends with.
That's great. That's wonderful. Now, I think my band played a festival with them probably a lot of years ago now, but I remember they opened with the I forget the song, Bad Touch, and they closed with it and they played it in the middle.
That was their big hit.
That's right. Hey, if you you got to fill the time, I guess, somehow.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But back to you guys and kind of your emergence. I remember, like probably most people my age, getting into you guys from the hit on up here in, on Much Music in Canada of Van Halen. You know, your song Van Halen, which kind of put you on the map and garnered you a lot of mainstream attention. And it was... I really liked it because it was so different from everything else out there. Like, obviously, I knew about Weezer, but then I was also getting into punk rock and all the Fat Record stuff and Epitaph and all that. And here you guys are, sort of this very, very odd man out, you know, on this platform.
Yeah, we were. I'm so glad that you heard that song. It was such a bizarre thing because we were just goofballs like playing in our hometown, and that song really took off, and we got to go to Toronto, and it was really exciting. But yeah, we were kind of like a Weezer meets Fat Records kind of thing.
Yeah,
that was what I thought we sounded like.
And you still do, which is cool too. You've kind of maintained your sound, but you know, you guys signed to a major label, and then you had another, you know, big mainstream thing you had was the Buffy the Vampire Slayer soundtrack song.
Sure.
You know, all these things were happening. I mean, it was kind of like a big deal, right? I mean, how did it feel at the time?
It was unbelievable. I mean, we kind of had like a few months where we were like, everything was going great. But, you know, that stuff is over really fast. Like the Buffy thing, kind of took a while to grow. Like it became a much bigger thing later on, like over the years, but it was, I don't know. It's just one of those lucky, weird things. It seemed like, I think when you have success like that, sort of randomly out of nowhere, you think, oh, this is my whole life is going to be like this from now on. And then it's over in a few months and you're like, oh, remember I did that thing that was popular and now it's not.
It is random. You know, like, I mean, obviously a different level, but it's kind of like how Primus had the South Park theme song, which I guess from, we used to have the same manager, and like the amount of money they make on that song is like absurd. You know, but it's just one of those random things. But you know, you at the time, I mean, you guys are from Santa Barbara. You're not like right in the film industry in LA or anything. How did that come to be with this, the Buffy thing?
So, what happened was a guy who was worked for my records that put out our record, first record, Joey Cape's record label.
I know Joey very well.
Yeah, so our buddy Marco, Marco 72.
Yeah,
everyone knows Marco. He was friends with this girl named Lisa Raphael, and he gave her, she's an actress in LA, and he gave her our record, and she was friends with Allison Hannigan, and they just started listening to it. And Allison Hannigan really liked it. They would listen to the record on the set of Buffy while they were filming it. And they were all kind of unknown, except for Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Right.
And so, and they would come see us. Like, we would play in LA at the Viper Room or something, and the cast would be there, and Joss Whedon would be there. And so, when they needed a theme song, they just asked a bunch of bands they were friends with to come up with ideas, and they liked the song we gave them, and they were, it was crazy. I mean, it's just like sort of a. I mean, we didn't try hard at all to get that. I mean, it just sort of happened.
Yeah, you know, obviously that show ended up having such a huge cult following, you know. But what do you think that was about the song, the theme song, that resonated so much with people? Because people still talk about how it's like, people are like, oh, it's one of the greatest TV theme songs ever. And I like it because I like punk rock, and it has like a cool kind of dark tone to it, but it's pretty simple, you know?
Yeah, I guess it's just simple, the energy of it. It just is like kind of fast. And so I don't know. I can't explain it. I mean,
yeah,
it's just, also the show is a great show. I mean, it really,
yeah,
that's kind of lucky, because you could be do the theme song for a show which isn't popular. And I've certainly done that too. And then you get less people remember it.
That's right. Obviously. Amazing. Well, so you guys have this theme song thing. You've got a song kicking around on MTV, and you know, all this stuff is happening, and you sign to Arista Records, major label, but then something happens. And as the story goes, and I'm kind of just going with whatever I've researched, speculation, maybe you guys wanted out, and then you ended up deciding to stay with an indie and signing to Fat Mike's, well, his other label, Honest Dawn's.
Yeah, that's true. And saying we wanted out is sort of like, it was just this period of time where labels had gone nuts signing wacko bands. And like, it was clear that a lot of the bands that got signed, their records were never going to come out. And
right.
They were going to get dropped, and we were like, had pitched all these songs to Arista, and they didn't like them. And we're like, oh wow, we're going to get, it's sort of like when you know your girlfriend's going to break up with you and you sort of do a preemptive. We yeah. sort of did that.
Right.
And I really liked Arista, and it was neat. It was like a great experience. I wouldn't trade that for the world, being signed to them. But we thought, oh, it would be much easier for us if we were on Fat Records, and because we're friends with those guys, and it just sort of makes more sense with our music. And so we asked to get off of the label. And the thing was, the guy who ran that label and owned it was a guy named Clive Davis, who's like a super famous record industry guy. There's movies about him and books and stuff.
Yeah.
And he was really awesome. And he, you know, when we asked to get off, he said, hey, well, I want to talk to Perry in person or over the phone before, just to make sure this is what he wants. And so I talked to Clive Davis about it, and he was like, well, you know, we just hope everything's cool with you guys. And It was neat, actually, because they could have been kind of jerks about it, but they it was cool, and it was neat that he reached out and talked to me about it. So
it is.
That's one of the things I remember.
Yeah.
And then of course going to Honest Don's, which was like sort of like the B, like it wasn't as cool as Fat Records.
Yeah.
I understood why we went there, but it was just because we're like more poppy. But it was a little bit like, hey, we need to, you know, but it turned out fine. It turned out great. And we're still working with Fat Records. Yeah. So it was terrific.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. You know, I remember Honest Don's really well because they had this compilation. All I remember about it was I think it was a dude, and there was like a drink cart on it with like a whole bunch of liquor bottles. I don't know if you remember this compilation. Like everybody had it. They were like giving it away at Warped Tour for free.
Uh-huh.
Or whatever. But I never understood, and I still don't understand, what the point of Honest Don's was. Because obviously Fat Records was huge at that time with, I mean, they weren't even putting NoFX records out yet, but like Lagwagon and Strung Out and No Use for a Name and High Standard and all that. And then there was Honest Don's, which had like Diesel Boy and Chicks Dig It and I think Riverdale's or something. But it was just weird. I just didn't understand what the point of the other label was.
I think there was an internal thing where the guy Mark Tomo was kind of his label that he was in charge of. It was like I think it was just like a little, I don't know, it didn't make sense. I mean, I think at the time Fat was so big, they probably thought, oh, we'll diversify and kind of do. I mean, they were probably trying to keep the Fat label really pure to what that sound was.
Okay.
And the pop punk, more pop punk stuff. I mean, this is my assumption. I never talked to them about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I never asked anyone about it, but, it was fine. It was like being on the same label in a lot of ways.
Right. I always wondered about that, like my whole life. And I was like, well, now I have an opportunity to actually ask somebody that was on the label. It was interesting too, that I'm like looking at the roster now, pulling it up, and like, I see Mad Caddies put out, I guess, their first album on there. And then they went on to be on Fat Records.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously Mad Caddies became a pretty big band. So
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a weird thing.
Those guys, we totally know because they're from our same area.
Oh, yeah.
And they used to come see Nerf Herder all the time when they were really like younger. I mean, they were young anyway. We were super old, but I remember them coming to see us.
That rules. That rules, man. Okay. Well, so part of the reason we're talking is you guys have a new release out. Well, kind of a new release. Your reissue of your third album, American Cheese. And, you know, it's your third record. It came out in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Is this one being focused on because you guys feel like it's kind of your breakthrough album or your best album as opposed to, you know, How to Meet Girls?
Absolutely not. No, it's just a random. I think I personally prefer it to How to Meet Girls, but it's just was like a random thing, like, oh, the 20 years coming up. And so we talked to Fat about it, and we were just like, it was just like, it's just something to do and like have, you know, there were a lot of outtakes. I think there's a ton of outtakes from How to Meet Girls too, but there was just like, I don't know, it was just something to do. Sort of like, oh, hey, there's the, like Steve, the drummer, he just noticed it like, oh, hey, the 20 year anniversary is coming up. Maybe they'll, and another thing about American Cheese is that it was really hard to find on vinyl. Like I didn't have a copy of it on vinyl.
Right.
I think Steve had one copy. And so we kind of wanted to have copies to give out to people. So that was part of it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it also marked the end of the first era of the band, right? I mean, right after American Cheese came out, you guys broke up. As the story goes, you were going to quit music completely and sell all your gear before finding your footing in doing jingles and that kind of line of work, which I think you still do today.
Oh yeah. No, it's been great. And I'm like, I do terrific with that. So that's a different story, but, it was kind of the end of that era of Nerf Herder. That's exactly what happened. You did great research.
Well, we're flying through this, man. So elaborate on that, though. I mean, when the band, like why do bands break up, right? Like, what was going on at the time? Was it just you guys were like burnt out, no money? You know what I mean? What was it? Because it can be a combination of things.
Well, it was a couple of things. The main thing was just like some personality conflicts within the band made it kind of not very fun.
Yeah.
And that combined with the like, oh, this kind of music is less popular. We're kind of going backwards in terms of making a living at this. And this is a good time to get out. You know, we all had other stuff we were doing, so it just seemed like a good time. I don't regret that at all. I think it was great. I'm happy about the record, and it was a good time to get out.
Yeah, absolutely. So, from what I researched, you started doing jingles. You weren't really sure about it, but one of your first ones was "Do You Like Waffles?" which somehow everyone knows, but I didn't know until literally today that you are the man behind Cat Flushing a Toilet.
Yeah, Cat Flushing a Toilet.
That's my favorite.
That pays for a lot of stuff for me.
It's great. It's great. Well, tell me what was going through your mind when you wrote Cat Flushing a Toilet. Like, tell me about the inspiration.
Oh, it was easy. So in 2008, I started doing... With Do You Like Waffles, I started getting work doing jingles and TV stuff. And I thought, I'm just going to write a song a week and put it up on my website. And that'll be like sort of practice for doing whatever dumb thing I'm going to do. And also kind of advertise my ability to do music. And I started doing like songs to go along with YouTube videos. I had a song [S2] Right. [S1] Called Hamster on a Piano. Eating popcorn. It was a huge, huge, like, it was like one of the biggest viral videos of that year. All kinds of crazy stuff happened with that. But then I did Cat Flushing a Toilet, and that was just based on videos of cats flushing toilets, which are really awesome to watch. Yeah. And you never get tired of watching that. But anyway, and that was just like a thing. I was doing these songs every week, and that kind of led to everything for me, actually. So Cat Flushing a Toilet was, and is still a very popular song. It's more popular now than ever. Kids bug their parents with it, I'm sure, but it gets played a lot.
So do you have a comedic background, or are you just a funny guy? Like, talk to me about your kind of early life. Like, were you in high school, were you like a class clown kind of guy, or are you kind of more of a... serious nerd with a, like, kind of a fun side? Like, where does this all stem from in your personality?
I would call myself like an introverted weirdo, but I was, and we have Nerdfurter has a song, Born Weird, that you probably heard. I don't know if you've been out, Weird Al plays on that sort of describes it, but I listened to Dr. Demento, and it just seemed natural to have, like, I guess one thing that really happened was that when I started playing music, I really wanted to be taken seriously. And so my band with guys from high school, our songs were like not funny. They were not funny at all. And I remember playing, people didn't like our band. We just weren't popular. But I remember one time we were playing and I just started saying funny stuff and people really reacted to that. And I thought, oh, this is a way to do this. And so then, you know, the songs started, I started, you know, that's like the personality that I can project is that being funny was what connects with people. So it's kind of a learning thing through experience. Who you are is you get up in front of people and if they like it, then that's your ticket.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously the comparisons to Weezer are very appropriate, and you guys have not shied away from it. Obviously you have the song we opened for Weezer, which is terrific. And what I love about that song too is it's a great snapshot of not just that time in your career, but also it's kind of a good oral history of Weezer.
Oh, sure.
Because I remember Pinkerton coming out, and I was in the ninth or 10th grade 10th grade, I think. And my friends went to the record store, like at lunch, to go get the CD and brought it back. And, you know, people were like skipping class to listen to it. Everyone was so excited for Pinkerton. And I remember at the end of school, people in the hallway crying because the record was so bad. And I was like, and I hadn't even heard it yet. And I was like, oh no, it's so bad. And of course, I wasn't sure. I was like, well, I don't know. I kind of like some of these songs, but I understand it's different. It's weird. But I love that you touch on that, you know, in the song.
Yeah. I mean, I love that record, but we were on that tour and you could just feel that people didn't like the record. And so it was just kind of in the air of that tour. Again, I wouldn't trade that for the world. That was such a great experience. It was so fun.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously, like, this is the band that had obviously like a huge amount of inspiration. You know, in fact, I remember one of my friends, when Van Halen came out, they were like, oh, they're just doing the Weezer in the Garage thing with a different band. And I was like, well, kind of like, you got a point there.
Yeah,
but it's a little different.
Yeah, why not?
Right on, man. I have a question for you, actually. This may be somewhat controversial, and you can say no comment if you don't want to. I won't name the band. They went on tour opening for Weezer.
Uh-huh.
They were told they were not allowed to make eye contact with Rivers Cuomo.
Uh-huh.
They also told me that they used to load Rivers in his own human-sized road case. He would get in a road case and it had a little slot that he could look through, and they would take him around the venue so he could like creepily look at people. Can you confirm or deny this rumor?
Well, it wasn't like that at all. They were just regular dudes when we toured with them. Okay. So I didn't see that.
Well, this was a little later on though. This was probably post Green Album, maybe, you know, around Maladroit or whatever album came out then.
Yeah. And we played with them before the Green Album, like kind of their second. Mm-hmm. When they decided to come back and start playing again, Rivers called me and was like, hey, Perry, we're going to start playing again. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. And he said, we want to play the show with you guys. Can you set one up in Santa Barbara? So we played a bunch of shows with them before the Green Album came out. And he was just a, you know, he's like a lot of singer people. He's a little, you know, maybe introverted or something like that. But it was fun. It was interesting thing. But he definitely didn't. I'm gonna write this down because I definitely want to be wheeled around in a box with a slot in it.
Just to look at people. Sure. Okay.
Yeah, I want to do that.
I mean, it might be true. It's hard to make that up.
It sounds far-fetched, and it seems like there would be a video of it or something. Why are they wheeling this box around with a slot from... that seems far... I'm not going to believe that unless I see a picture of him getting into the box.
Maybe.
And getting but wheeled around.
This is like...
it's a great story, though.
Well, this is before, you know, everyone had a camera in their pocket, too, you know? So...
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I don't know, but hey, I have no idea.
I'm sorry I can't verify that.
that's totally fine. So, you guys put out records lately about every 8 years. I don't know.
Yeah, we're due.
Yeah. You guys go through the whole undergrad, law school. You guys have like a whole, you know, six-figure career you have to get through to make a record. Now, 2024, that will be the next one. Do you think you guys are going to be on pace for that?
I'm hoping it's earlier because we've recorded a bunch of tracks. So we have a ton of songs recorded. We just have to get them like sung and lyrics written and put together. So I would love to have one out early next year, but who knows?
Can you leak a title or leak an idea of something? I'm sure you write songs all the time, but one of my favorite things is when you guys put out a new record, just looking through all the titles of the songs before I listen to them and going, I wonder what that's about.
Well, we have one song that's done that I could send you, actually. It's called Big Guy.
Big Guy.
And we actually sent it out to people when we canceled our, we were doing like a, gonna do like a stage it but we canceled it. And so we sent it to all the people who had signed up. But that's, it's just about being a big guy, like eating a lot of food. But it's sort of silly. But we have a song called The Wizard and His Mom. It's about the wizard and his mom. And then that was inspired by a, when last time we played in Portland, Maine, there was a, like a cosplay convention going on. And this wizard was like hanging out in the lobby of the hotel. And then this, his mom drove up in a Subaru and picked him up. And I was like, oh, that's neat. Wizard and his mom.
That reminds me of that movie. What is it? Role Models with Stifler. I don't know his real name. And Paul Rudd. That's a great movie. It's a great comedy.
I never saw it. I'll have to watch
it's,
that.
It's surprisingly holds up. Well, you also have a new song, We All Got COVID, which is very good and very true. Tell me about that story. And also, you mentioned Chicks Dig It in this song, which I believe we already talked about. And
yeah,
it made me remember the Short Music for Short People compilation where you and Chicks Dig It have two of the most memorable songs on that thing.
It was a very great, I mean, that record's great.
Yeah.
It's a great record. But Chicks Dig It, they're awesome. We'd never played with them before. I'd never met them before, but we played with them in Portland and Seattle, and that's when we got COVID. So that's why we mentioned them in the song, but they were awesome and they're like such a great band. I don't know if you've ever seen them, but they're amazing. You probably have.
I have. I mean, they're from Western Canada. We're from, you know, Toronto area. But no, I've seen them play a bunch of times, met them before, and actually my band covered their Quit Your Job short song before.
Covered it.
So
hey, what is your band?
We're called
You keep mentioning it.
Yeah, we're called Silverstein.
Silverstein. I've heard of you guys. I'm totally old and out of it, so I can't even remember what I've heard. So are you guys still touring and stuff like that?
Yes, we are.
Oh, well, maybe we'll bump into you at some point.
It would be wonderful. We'd love to.
We would love to come to Canada and play there because we've always had great fun shows there and people are super nice. And you guys have that free healthcare we want to take advantage of while we're there.
Yeah, you could probably hook you up. I mean, usually like they don't really ask. If you just say, yeah, I'm American, they go, ooh, and then they say, it's fine. Just come on in. We'll take care of you guys.
Oh, that's awesome.
But you know, I will say, you know, Fat Records punk or Epitaph punk, skate punk, whatever you want to call it, that scene, which, you know, had its day in the sun, you know, around when you guys were on Honest Dawn's, you know, in the mid to late 90s, that music is still very, very popular in Canada, especially in Quebec. I mean, you guys could come up here and play to really big crowds, you know, like Lagwagon comes up here all the time and is, you know, drawing huge crowds, just like the same as the late 90s.
We would love to come up there. I have to say, any place Nerf Herder plays, like 100 people show up. That's just the rule of thumb. But we'd love to come up there and play, eat some poutine and play for 100 people. It'd be great.
You're going to play for a lot more than 100 people up here in Canada. I guarantee it. You guys are overdue to come back. So please come up.
Are you in Montreal? Where are you based?
I'm Toronto.
Toronto. Okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. You mentioned that. Yeah. Toronto's awesome.
Yeah, it's a fantastic city, a huge city. Lots going on. Traffic sucks, though. That's one thing they got to figure out. But hey.
I would take public transit. Is there a subway?
Yeah, the subway kind of isn't very good. They built two lines very close to each other, and they don't really go anywhere you want to go. It's kind of a poor design. Obviously, it's an old design because the city expanded kind of not the way the subway expanded. So,
yeah,
you know, what can you do?
I still want to come there. So there's great food.
Come hang. We'd love to have you. And I hope you guys are going to plan another tour soon and a new record. We All Got COVID is a great song, but we need more Nerf Herder music.
All right. Thank you so much. Thanks again for having me on your show. I'm very happy to be here and I love talking. So this is very fun for me.
Awesome, Perry. Well, all the best with everything you guys got coming up. Anything to tell the people before I let you go?
Nope, I've got nothing to sell. So just have a good day and
wonderful.
And drink a lot of water.
Will do. All right, man. All the best, Perry.
All right, take care. Bye.
Thanks, man. So there it is with Perry Grip of Nerf Herder. Wow, we flew through that one. Lots of information in a very short time. Well, thank you so much for tuning in. Definitely take a look at Nerf Herder's career, because they have done some really interesting stuff, whether it's their breakthrough song Van Halen, whether it's the Buffy the Vampire Slayer soundtrack, whether it's their song We Opened for Weezer, which is terrific, or whether it's their new song, which I'm going to play in just a few minutes, We All Got COVID. They're up to some really, really great things. Thank you again for tuning in. I will be back again with new podcast episode next week. And of course, Mike and I will be back counting down all the new music on New Noise, which is coming back at you. I know you've missed Mike. He's missed you too. So make sure you're tuned in to that. Anyway, I will leave you with a tune. We All Got COVID. Here it is, Nerf Herder on Lead Singer Syndrome.
Tour was a lot of fun. Now I'm lying in bed with a fever of 101. We all got COVID. Yeah, we all got COVID. We all got sick. We all got COVID. Doing the Pacific Northwest. I guess our safety hygiene wasn't the best. We all got COVID. Yeah, we all got COVID. We all got sick. We all got COVID. The weekend was a total blast. A total blast. I never thought to wear a mask. No mask. Shaking hands and signing autographs. It all seems kind of funny, but my chest hurts when I laugh. Oh, COVID. Maybe it's revenge for a stupid song about their town. We all got COVID. Yeah, we all got COVID. We all got sick. We all got COVID. We were playing with a great band called Jim Stigget from Canada. No, those guys, they never did get it. Free now, Mammoth Cup is really murder. Gonna change our band name to Germ Herder. Now my head is exploding and I'm coughing up a lung. We all got COVID. Yeah, we all got COVID. We all got sick. We all got COVID. Yeah, we all got sick. We all got COVID. Yeah, we all got sick. We all got COVID. Yeah, we all got sick. We all got COVID. Yeah, we all got sick. We all got COVID.
Except for me.